there, and thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast, where we make adulting easier by making money easier. This is your host, Lauren. And I'm joined today by Andrew Giancola, creator of Master Money Co. and the Personal Finance Podcast. Like me, Andrew is also a Tampa Bay area native. He loves playing pickleball and raising his two kids with his wife, Irene. Thanks for joining me, Andrew.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Our goal for today is to make adulting easier for listeners by discussing a personal finance topic, which of course you're used to doing since managing money is a big part of adulting. So today let's talk about passive income. But before we jump to that, I did want to ask, why did you decide to start the Personal Finance Podcast?
So the real reason was I have a huge passion for personal finance. And I was this weird kid in high school that actually kind of read personal finance blogs in computer class. And so it was just something that I absolutely loved. And so I would talk about it to my friends so much, they finally just told me to shut up and do something about it. And so what I did was I started a podcast instead. And so we started in 2020 during COVID because we had a little extra time at that point, and started the podcast then to teach people how to build wealth. And at the beginning, it was just kind of my mom and my wife listening to the show. And then eventually we kind of grew it over time. And now we've grown it to a place that we're actually happy with. So this has been a fun journey so far.
Yeah, that's exciting. So what is it that you like about personal finance?
I think it's the fact that money can truly create freedom for anybody. And I truly believe that anybody can build wealth. And so money is just that tool that allows people to create freedom in their lives to do anything else they want in life. So a lot of people kind of pursue wealth for weird, you know, reasons, to buy that Lamborghini or the Ferrari. I see it as the tool to create time freedom. And so that is one of the most powerful things that I think that you can do with your life. And so that's why I love teaching people this stuff, because once that light bulb moment goes off where they actually get what's going on, it is the most rewarding thing for me. And we get messages every single day from people just kind of understanding how to unlock that time freedom. And then they start to figure out, hey, I have a number that I can target so that I can go after retirement. And now we can actually go after this. So it's a really exciting thing for me to talk about. And I love it so much. It's one of the things that I just think about all the time.
So personal finance, it can lead to time freedom, financial freedom. I think the best way to get there is through passive income. What do you think?
I think that is by far one of the best ways to get there. And it's one of the most powerful things that you can actually do with your dollars. Because as you and I know, I think overall, over everything else, people talk about cutting back on lattes and sure, all that kind of stuff works. But your income is the main driver to allow you to have that time freedom. And so figuring out how to increase that income will solve a ton of your different problems. Now, understanding how to handle that income once it comes in is a different situation. But if you can increase your income, that will solve so many different problems for you when it comes to your money that truly, I think that's where everybody's main focus should be.
So much of personal finance does focus on the quote unquote defense side. And I do think that we should talk more about the offense, more about the income side of things for sure. So how do you define passive income?
So I define passive income as something that, you know, you use a very small part of your time, but you can invest your dollars to earn more money over time. And so this is something where over the long run, you can really grow your wealth with a bunch of different passive income streams. But at the same time, it is not something that you spend a ton of your time earning that income. So that's kind of how I define it in a very, very simple way. And it's something that I think a lot of people can use in order to increase their income over time.
Yeah. So on one side of things, how I think of it is there's like your W-2 job. That's like the most active way to earn income. You're trading your time for your money. The most passive thing would be what? Stocks, bonds, stuff like that?
Exactly. Yep. And I think that's a great example is utilizing something like stocks could be some of the most passive ways to actually, you know, invest your dollars. You put your dollars into the market that produces an income for you over time through, you know, dividends and or appreciation. And you can see that difference over a long period of time.
What else is on this spectrum?
So I think for overall, you can kind of look at some of the top investments. So there's one end of the spectrum, I think, that a lot of people really don't look at, which is things like you can invest in stocks. So stocks are the first one, obviously. There's dividend investing, but there's a bunch of different ways to invest in this. So dividends are a great form of passive income where you're just putting your dollars into the market and then dividends are coming back. Now there's taxation, things that we could talk about and all that kind of stuff. But overall, that's a great way to do it. There's REITs. So if you are interested in real estate investing, but you don't want to handle tenants or you don't want to deal with property managers or things like that, you have things like REITs or crowdfunding investing. And then there's things like CDs or putting your money into a high yield savings account. Those are all forms of passive income. Anything that's producing an income based on you investing your dollars. So these are all the things that are completely passive that you don't have to spend any time whatsoever. Then there are things where you can have some upfront work that maybe it takes you, you know, 5-10 hours to create that item, but then all of a sudden it's going to pay you forever. So you can see a lot of creators in the industry doing things like courses, for example, where it's taking you 10-20 hours upfront, but then all of a sudden you're done and then all you're making money month over month based on that course. Or you can see this with ebooks or all these different things. And so that is much less passive income, but it's still, because it requires that upfront work, but it still can be passive in the future. And so there's a lot of different things on this spectrum where you can see, you know, minimal amount of time per month. Really, it's like 2 to 3 hours or less per month is what I kind of define as passive income. Anything above that, then you have more active income or a side hustle.
Where does real estate fit?
I think that real estate can fit into the passive income side. I think this is one of those things where it depends on how much time you have to spend on that property. So a lot of people, if you manage it properly and you set it up properly up front, you're spending an hour or less on the majority of your properties per month. Now, there are some months that will skew if you have major issues or something that you have to repair. But outside of that, you can set this up in a very passive way, especially if you can set it up in a way where you get a property manager and all you're doing is managing that manager. And sure, problems will still arise, but it is something I think that you can spend less than 2 to 3 hours a month and be able to manage that portfolio. Now, if you have a portfolio of 1,000 different units, that might change on the spectrum significantly because now you're spending much more time. Many more problems will arise unless you have a management team in place that can handle that.
So what's the difference between like passive income and a side hustle?
So a side hustle is something that you actively have to continuously be working towards in order to actually earn that income. Whereas passive income, you can spend 1 to 2 hours and utilize leverage to allow you to make that income. So the big difference there is side hustles are things like, you know, going out and starting a side business and or driving for Uber or TaskRabbit or any of those types of things, and or even, you know, just starting, you know, like some sort of online business. And so all that takes your time, it takes your energy, it takes your effort. Whereas passive income is the opposite. It is where you spend a minimal amount of time, you invest your dollars for the most part instead, and your dollars are what produces that income. And so that's the big difference between those two things. And having a mix of both is absolutely amazing because you can really increase your income over time because of that. And a lot of times you can turn side hustles into passive income. Sometimes those side hustles take a lot of work and then eventually they can become passive income. So a great example of that would be something like starting a YouTube channel where there's a lot of people who started a YouTube channel and they have all these videos that are creating income for them every single month. And over time, as those videos age, a lot of times they rank even higher and you can earn a higher income because of that. But it's the work they did up front and the work they're continuously doing that allows them to create that passive income on the back end that really creates, you know, an income for them in the future. So it's one of those things where the spectrum is an interesting topic because a lot of people will have different arguments on this, but I think it's just 2 to 3 hours a month or less is where the passive income comes in.
That makes a lot of sense. How many passive income streams should somebody have?
There's always the famous quote that like the average millionaire has 7 passive income streams. And a lot of it is just, you know, very simple things, I think is what it really comes down to. I think you got to figure out what the number is, what your retirement number is, or what your freedom number is, and whatever streams you can get to actually achieve that goal or your monthly amount that you need to spend every single month, that is what your passive income should be. So it's actually more so a number over how many streams you should have. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing that we kind of need to look at. It's the same thing with retirement. Like you need to know your retirement number, and retirement is a number, not an age. It's the same thing with passive income. It's that number that we really need to target instead of how many streams we need to have. If you can have one stream that can accomplish this and it's you know, safe enough to withstand, you know, the test of time, that's going to be the most important thing that you can do.
How do we know what our number is?
What I always do is you look at how much you spend every single year, how much you want to spend every year in retirement, and then you could do the simple math of multiplying that number by 25. So say you want to spend $80,000 per year in retirement, you multiply that number by 25, and you're going to get your retirement number, which in this situation would be $2 million. But if you're looking at passive income, what you can do is look at the amount that you want to spend every single month. So if you want to spend $120,000 a year for easy math, and you need $10,000 per month in order to do that, then you try to create $10,000 of passive income every single month. And this is how you can find that freedom number in both different ways. And this is one of the most powerful things that you can do for your life is once you know this number, now you have the target and now you have the goal. And the hardest part is to get that target to stop moving. But at the same time, it is still one of the best things that you can do is figure out that number because then you have that target and you can achieve it.
I've definitely noticed that I like doing it, but the cash flow approach first, better than the 4% rule, which is what you're talking about. I like the idea that my real estate pays my bills, and then I have my stocks maybe for later on when I want to sell them, buy a car, sell them, go on vacation, something like that. But if my real estate is paying my bills, and I have found that the net worth needs to be lower than if it's just stocks. Have you found that too?
Exactly. And if you can cover your cash flow first, that means everything else, your basis is covered. And so you don't really have to worry as much because now you have so much freedom and flexibility to allow you to just build wealth if you want to, or if you don't want to, you don't really have to. It's one of those things where you get your living expenses covered. Once that's covered, it is so much, it's so much better overall to be able to live life that way because your expenses are covered. You don't have to worry as much.
I want to ask about W-2s really quickly here. Sure. W-2s get a bad rap, right? Everybody's like, we want to leave our jobs. But is there anybody whose time is maybe actually better spent on a W-2 than trying to like churn out passive income and side hustles?
I think for a lot of people, you know, spending the majority of your time trying to increase your income at your day job is the first thing that you should do. And we have a system talking about this where we kind of talk through, hey, how do you actually increase your income at your day job? And it's through negotiation, and it's kind of getting in collaboration with your boss. So we have a 6-month system that we talk about where you actually talk to your boss 6 months before your yearly review and you have a conversation about this and say, hey, I want to get a raise. And you say, you know, what do I need to do or what kind of metrics do I need to hit in order to achieve that goal so that I can get a raise? And over the course of 6 months, they're going to tell you what you need to do. And then you go and implement those things. And every month you're meeting with your boss so that they're not surprised when you walk in 6 months down the line and say, hey, I want to make more money. We're both on the same page. We've been talking about this for the last 6 months. And you go through that process. That is the number one place that you should try to increase your income is at your day job. Then outside of that, if you're really not achieving your goals or you're not accomplishing your goals, then you can add in side hustles and passive income. But increasing your income at your day job, shoveling that into things like, you know, stocks or real estate is going to be the best thing you can do. And then beyond that, then you can take those extra steps to add side hustles and other things.
Yeah, get other degrees, get some certifications, be documenting all of this. Like you said, the negotiation side is huge, especially for women who I don't think do it enough. I'm glad that you have that system there. So we talked about a financial freedom number. You also talked about retirement. Are those things different?
So I would consider retirement and financial freedom two different things, only if retirement is where you kind of don't want to do anything anymore. It's where you get to the point in time where you're just not willing to work anymore. Financial freedom is where you are not working a traditional W-2 or a day job and your expenses are covered. But at the same time, you still want to continue to do things. Maybe you want to pursue hobbies or interests. But in addition, you want to go out and you want to maybe start additional businesses and or work for charities that you believe in, those types of things. So between those two things, I think it is really, really important for most people to see it as financial freedom. And that's what most people are really pursuing is financial freedom. Whereas a lot of people will say retirement, but what they really mean is they just want to pursue their interests. And so between those two things, I think it's really, really powerful to kind of understand what you want to do and why you're doing it, which is why your why is so important.
Is there anything in the United States that we can rely on retirement wise? I mean, what do you think about in terms of healthcare, right? Doing Medicare and like Social Security? Is there any, should we, I guess around 35-ish, I'm 35, like let's talk about it that way. Should I be planning on anything from the government when I'm like 65?
For the most part, I do all my planning without factoring those things in. So a lot of times those are going to be icing on the cake, but I usually don't factor those in. Now, do I think Social Security is going anywhere in the short run? At least I don't think it's going anywhere. People have been saying it's going to go away since the 60s and 70s, and it's still here. And so it's one of those things that you cannot predict. And so it may not be one of those things that's guaranteed. So I try not to plan for it. And then it's just icing on the cake when I get to that point in time that I can utilize it. The same thing goes for healthcare. So I'm a big proponent of the HSA. And the HSA is something that I use actually as a retirement account instead of as my health savings account because it has the triple tax benefits. And so that's something where I'll use a lot of those funds in the HSA for healthcare later on. But I'm trying to take care of all the things that I can control. So focusing on the things that I can control, and then anything else that comes down the line is going to be something that's just a bonus on top. And hopefully it'll still be there. My assumption is it will still be there, but you never know. And I don't have a crystal ball to kind of predict that kind of stuff. So overall, I think it is one of those things where you plan for the worst, but then you hope for the best is kind of what happens when you get there.
So something that I am dealing with is the gap between the financial freedom number and the retirement situation, but specifically with retirement accounts. How do you think about those for people that don't want to wait till they're 59 and a half to get access to this stuff?
So there's a lot of things that you can do. We have episodes that we kind of talk through where there's six different ways that you can access your retirement accounts early. And so like the Roth conversion ladder, for example, is one of the typical ones that a lot of people will talk about, where you can take your traditional IRA, convert it to a Roth IRA, and those contributions after 5 years, you can access them penalty free. And so that's one of those things where you could do stuff like that. But I also just love for people to diversify into a taxable brokerage account in real estate. So real estate's obviously the easy answer because you can cash flow on real estate and utilize that as your income. But in addition, there is nothing wrong with investing in a taxable brokerage account because you have flexibility. And when it comes to personal finance, having as much flexibility as you possibly can have is one of the most powerful things that you can do, because when you get to retirement, you want flexibility in all different directions, which is why I also am a big proponent of having a large cash position as well, just in case you need it for, you know, any different situation when you're retired. So between all these different things, you really want to diversify your investments, especially if you plan on retiring early, and that's going to allow you to have that flexibility to access some of these funds. So things like the HSA, things like using that taxable brokerage account and real estate are really going to help you diversify some of those income sources.
Can you explain what taxable brokerage account means?
Sure. So that's just your standard brokerage account that you open if you go to Fidelity or Vanguard or wherever else, which is not a retirement account. It's just a regular brokerage account that you open up. And what happens is you get taxed on your capital gains rate. So this is just something where it's really not as big of a deal as a lot of people think about when you run the numbers. You save a lot more money in your 401k, your Roth IRA, those types of things. But if you're going to retire early, this allows you to have that flexibility where there's no penalties to take your money out of that account. And so you can do a lot more stuff with the taxable brokerage account if you're going to retire early.
What is the biggest aha moment that listeners of the Personal Finance Podcast have, do you think? What do you hear from people the most about?
So the biggest thing is a lot of people just were never taught this stuff. And that's kind of the real reason why we started this, is they had no idea what to do. And really, when they start to realize that they actually got to get their money together and figure out what the heck is going on, they get scared. And there's a huge psychology behind this, but they just get really worried and nervous. And so we try to simplify it as much as we possibly can so that they can understand it, A, and then go out and implement it and take action. So the biggest thing we do is we want you to go out and take action. And that's the coolest feedback that we get, is most of these people are finally opening their retirement accounts and they're finally actually getting out there and taking action and investing their money. And we want to try to make you as comfortable as possible doing that, because I truly believe even small amounts of money over time can grow to very large amounts of money. And so that's the coolest thing you can see, is people opening up their retirement accounts and starting to invest their dollars. And then you can see that the major difference overall.
Yeah, making little changes as soon as possible will have the biggest result earlier on. And that, I think, doesn't matter how old you are. If you're 50, just because you haven't started yet, doesn't mean you shouldn't start. Like, you should definitely start. It's better to start at 50 than 60, right? You better start at 25 than 35. Just get started. Just do something. Take one little step.
Exactly. Just getting started is one of the biggest things. And we just had a conversation where recently I just did an episode on what to do if you start investing late. And it's really never too late. You just got to get started, and your savings rate is going to be a huge factor in terms of how fast you can retire. And again, retirement is a number, not an age. So it's one of those things that once you realize that, you can see it's never too late to start investing.
It's the biggest aha moment in personal finance. And even me, I got a business finance degree and it did not click for me until I was probably like 25. So a few years after that, where you're like, oh my God, my money can just make money. If I get enough assets, that can make enough money for me to live my life. And I do not have to trade my time for money. It's so self-explanatory, but I did not even know that when I graduated with a finance degree from the University of Florida.
And that's the hardest thing, is people just don't understand that going forward. And a lot of people will start investing and they'll say, man, my money really is not growing. And it really does take like your first $100,000 invested to really see a big difference. And so it's just that patience over time. And all of a sudden you see it really start to compound and snowball and grow. And that is the most powerful thing that you will ever see. But you gotta be patient. That's the most important thing.
I've seen a lot of people that get impatient like 5 years in and cash everything out. Have you noticed that before with people?
It is one of the most heartbreaking thing to me when they start to do that, because they're just getting started and it's just getting rolling, and they take it out at the worst possible time. And it is one of those things that I try as hard as possible to educate people so they don't do that, because it is way too common.
So the stock market recently hit all-time highs. Is this a good time or a bad time to get started investing in stocks?
So in the short run, The biggest thing to understand is when you're investing your dollars, you should not care what is happening in the short run whatsoever. You should always be investing because the long run is what truly, truly matters. In the short run, the stock market is a popularity contest. In the long run, the stock market is a weighing machine, is a favorite famous Warren Buffett quote. And what you want to focus on is if you're not willing to invest in something for 10 years or longer, then you shouldn't even consider it whatsoever. It is one of those things that if you go, here's my favorite exercise. Go and take your phone out and pull up the S&P 500, for example, in your favorite stock app. And you can pull up a one-year chart. It's going to go up. It's going to go down. It's going to go left, right. It's going to be all over the place. It's going to be super volatile. Then take that stock market chart and put it the longest time horizon you can on your phone. And what direction does that market go? It goes in one direction, which is up. And that is where you really want to have your dollars invested, is for the long term. In fact, there's a great book by Brian Feraldi called Why Does the Stock Market Go Up? And in that book, he shows you that if you invest in the S&P 500 for 20 years or longer, the fail rate is 0%. Like, you never, ever fail because long-term investors will always, always win. So when you're investing your dollars, don't focus on the short term. Always look at the long term and just continue investing every single month.
20 years is so long.
And that's the thing. Patience comes into play. But the patience is the biggest thing when it comes to your money, is understanding that if you can be patient and you can focus on the long game, it's a huge mindset shift. And truly, it's all psychology. So that it's really just educating yourself and having that psychology and reminding yourself that the long game is what truly matters.
And I think you need to be best friends with your older self. So I turned 35 this year. I should be best friends with 55-year-old Lauren, right? Like, I should care exactly. about her so much that it is so easy to put money away for her.
And I'm the same age. I'm 35. And so one thing I keep thinking about is that, you know, I graduated from college. And when I graduated from college, that's like the amount of time I have left until, you know, you're going to be getting into your 50s and all that kind of stuff. And it goes by so fast. You're going to really appreciate it if you start now and start as soon as you possibly can. Because life goes by super, super fast. And it is one of those things that I try to remind myself every single day.
I'm trying to set my sister up. She just turned 21. She's read Brian Feraldi's book, and she's read some, I assigned some books to her. She just read Psychology of Money. She's read Millionaire Next Door, and I'm trying to get her going on this. And she has, I don't think she has a Roth yet, but she's putting $150 a month into her brokerage account. She's been doing that since she was 19 years old. I mean, can you imagine how set up she is going to be when she's our age? Like, it's crazy when you think about it.
It's absolutely amazing. Even that $150 a month, if you do the math and you backtrack it just based on her age, she's going to be well over a millionaire just by doing that alone. And so that's just one of the most amazing things that you can see, is that develop over time, and that just small amounts of money. When you have time and you pair that with time over that time frame, they turn into very large amounts of money over that time frame. It's just absolutely amazing.
And if you don't have time, it's still a math problem. You just need more money.
You just need more money, and you need to increase your savings rate. And it's one of those things where, you know, if you say, for example, you got an 8% rate of return in the S&P 500, if you had a 50% savings rate, so you save 50% of your income, you would retire in 8 years. And so that's kind of where you can see that changes the factor very, very quickly. And so understanding that increasing your income and being able to take that extra income and put it towards your savings and your investing is going to change your financial trajectory forever.
Forever. Well, Andrew, is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I just want to say thank you so much for having me on here. I think this is absolutely amazing. And anybody who has never started investing, if you're listening to this podcast right now, what we're saying is start today.
Absolutely. So you can let people know how to find the Personal Finance Podcast, follow you on social media and things like that.
Sure. So we're on any podcast player, the Personal Finance Podcast. And then all of our socials are at Mastermoney Co., Mastermoney Co.
All right, guys, you can follow me on Twitter /X at Adulting is Easy, Instagram at Adulting is Easy Real. This will also be on YouTube at Adulting is Easy. If you like this episode, you may also like episode 122, Finding Passionate Income with Brian Lubin. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Hopefully, Andrew and I have made adulting a little easier for you.